Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is podcast 375, and I'm very happy finally to be on the porch or the deck, whatever you want to call it, and it is actually warm out here. You know, usually when I get out here late at night, it's spring in the upper Midwest, and the temperatures have been, you know, variable. Sometimes it's 60, sometimes it's 80. Today was like the first or second real summery day, and it is a beautiful evening out here. The trees are full. This is level two of technology for recording the podcast, and this particular level has some issues with things like wires that bounce around and make noise. And it drives me crazy, but this was the quickest level of technology. Level one would have actually been the easiest, which is just my portable recorder, which has the microphones built in. This is level two, and I very quickly dragged it out here onto the deck, onto the glass table. I've got the microphone sitting in a box to try to shield it from electrical noise and other things, you know, and I'm going nuts. So this is going to be a weird podcast. The second reason this is going to be a weird podcast is because I have to pick somebody up at the airport in about an hour. So I've got Flight Radar up and running on the computer, and I don't know if you've ever seen flight tracking 24 or one of these apps, and you know, you can enter the flight that you're tracking and it'll tell you where the plane is, and then you can watch it come into the air traffic control system, which is really cool because it'll fly right over my house. I'm very excited about that because it's coming in from LA. So I got to go out to the airport here, so I'm going to try to do this podcast actually fairly quickly. You know, usually it's a little later in the evening. It's about 11:20 right now, and so usually it's a little later. And so I'm not going to rush through this, but I'm going to see how many things I can talk about in half an hour in this particular podcast. So, you know, I talk a lot about technology, and you know that when I do talk about technology, usually I talk also about Bocklin R&D. I talk a lot about manufacturing and technology. And the fact is that technology, while we talk about autonomous machines, we talk about robotics, and we talk about the effect on employment, the fact is that technology has been a part of manufacturing really since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. And so when I talk about manufacturing and technology, I got to talk about Bocklin R&D. Now, there have been lots of developments at Bocklin so far in the new year. First of all, if you're interested in manufacturing in the business, or you are in the manufacturing business and you're interested in what Bocklin does, check out an updated all-new Bocklin.com, because there's a lot of resources there for manufacturers. Secondly, I'm going to tell you now that John Bocklin's doing some pretty revolutionary things, whether it's coming up with innovative new inventions like the expandable collet pin, or using 3D printing or additive manufacturing in the manufacturing process. John's been doing these webinars, and he's doing a webinar on June 2nd at Bocklin.com in association with Stratasys. He'll be doing another one later in June, which I'll tell you more about. And the idea here is to explain and show to manufacturers and to people interested in what Bocklin can do for them, what they can do with additive manufacturing. John's one of the few people who has been able to work additive manufacturing into the manufacturing business successfully. Now, I've told you a lot about Bocklin over the time that that John and I've worked together on the podcasts. First of all, wicked fast turnaround times are a key thing to remember with Bocklin R&D. Also, innovative solutions, real client service, real resources about Bocklin at Bocklin.com. I can't emphasize that enough, especially with webinars and also the podcast that John's been on. So check it out at Bocklin.com, BAKLUND.com. And if you want more information, contact John Bocklin at Bocklin R&D. Find out what energy, wisdom, knowledge, and imagination can do for your company today. Bocklin.com, BAKLUND, Bocklin.com. So in this podcast, it's going to be a little bit weird because I'm using the new technology. I don't want to go into it in depth. I like this microphone because it's really sensitive. The problem is the microphone is really sensitive. So if I pound my feet, you might be able to hear like a sort of, if I knock the wire, then it creates that kind of sound. And I'm going to try to avoid doing that. The other thing is it's a little windy out here tonight. So you will hear an occasional low frequency, and these things drive me crazy. Now, sometimes people don't hear them. If you're listening in the car, you're probably not going to hear it. But if you have headphones on, and I do encourage people to listen to the podcast on headphones. That's one of the reasons I do them, because I put out really high quality files because I really like the ambient noise. And the more I do this, the more I really enjoy doing podcasts outside. So, you know, I'm in the flight path kind of for the airport. So, you know, you're going to hear planes going over. It's a beautiful moonlit night, almost a full moon as we head into June. And this will be the last weekend in June. And summer is upon us almost. And it's great to be outside. And I don't want to be anywhere but outside. And then, of course, see why I like this mic. Because now if I use the portable digital recorder, you can hear planes, but not like that, okay? So, and why do I? I was thinking about this today. Why do I like living in the flight path for the airport? I'll tell you why. Because when I was a kid, we used to go see our friends, the McLeods, who lived in Palatine, Illinois, and they lived literally, it seemed like, right on the end of the runway at O'Hare. And the first thing I would do when I got there was go in the backyard and lay down. And by the time the planes got over their house in Palatine, they'd have the doors open and the wheels down. And it was almost as though you really could look up into the plane. That's why I liked it. And I'll tell you why I thought about that today. I came up on an intersection and there was a woman in a convertible and she was smoking a cigarette. And I smelled that cigarette smell. Now, of course, the McLeods both smoked. And Don was a good, that's right. Phyllis was a good friend of my mom's from when they were kids. They were childhood friends. And Don could drink a horse under a table. And my dad loved Don. Everybody loved Don and Phyllis. And they both smoked. And I'll never forget, you'd go in the house and it had that smell of, you know, cooking, you know, a roast cooking and cigarettes burning and, you know, sort of the clinking of martini glasses. And then the kids would go out in the backyard and we'd lay down and watch the planes because that was what we did. So that's kind of a throwback to hanging out with the McLeods in suburban Chicago. And it was always a great big journey to go up there. And you'd be so tired when you came home because we had to drive all the way back down to the south side after we went to the McLeods house up in Palatine. So anyway, that made me think about it. So one of the reasons I love this microphone is it just really has, it's highly sensitive and you can really, it's a condenser mic and you can really hear that stuff. Using a condenser mic outside is ridiculous because it picks up everything, including every vibration. I'm literally holding this mic about 2.5 feet from my mouth and I hate holding the mic. I'd rather have it on a stand, but if I put this on anything, it's just going to vibrate. So, you know, I'm in a consternation. I'm consternated. This is a consternating situation out here on the deck, but I'm going for it. And the other reason it's consternating, of course, is, you know, I got a plane coming in, flying literally over this house in about 25 minutes. So I got to do this podcast and then head out to the airport. But so I'm going to talk about the stories just that I'm kind of passionate about this evening. And I haven't, you know, written anything down. I've just pulled the story. So I at first tonight, I was actually going to do a whole podcast about my upcoming trip in the Mobile Podcast Command Unit and going out to the McLeods. And then I thought, that's kind of short shrift for a podcast because there are some pretty really heavy things going on in the news, and I do like to go through the news and pull stuff that I'm really passionate about. And I think when I don't do that, I'm pulling my punches, which I've learned never to do. And the other thing is that people are missing, you know, at least one point of view, and I figured out. You know, when you listen to most of these pundits right now and you listen to what's going on right now, they're really not, they're talking about personalities and they're talking about, you know, things like Hillary Clinton's, you know, scandals, which I'm not trying to diminish, by the way. I'm not trying to diminish the fact that there may be some scandals associated with the Clinton Global Initiative, but, you know, it gets tedious. That stuff gets old and tedious, and I don't know that it serves anything. But at the same time, running away from it to talk about lighthearted things it certainly has its place, but it's also not kind of what I do. I mean, I like to try to give people, give you guys sort of dots to connect on your own to get you thinking. And there's a lot being written this week about technology. And, you know, I guess Paul Krugman started it all out by saying a while back that he didn't think too much of the tech boom because it didn't seem to create any real economic growth. And, you know, what's the real value of pets.com or Facebook or something to that effect? And there's been a lot of counter statements about it. It's just very interesting, people's reactions to technology. First of all, I will tell you that, you know, economists argue about how to measure the technical revolution, the technology revolution, versus the industrial revolution. The industrial revolution was characterized by pulling people out of agriculture and moving them into manufacturing. And there were very real measurable things associated with manufacturing, especially since all of the modes of measuring economic success in our society currently, all the models that the Bureau of Labor Statistics and all these other groups use really are rooted in the Industrial Revolution, even if it was, you know, the 1950s and 60s when they developed these models. So it's hard to measure the impact of technology in terms of economic growth. It's not something that's easily measured, and that's the first thing that needs to be pointed out. I don't know what the value of social media is. I don't think we know yet what the value of social media is. You know, I don't think we know yet what the value of mobile technology is. I can tell you this. The fact that I can sit out here on my deck, at least in my business, as problematic as it is, with a microphone that you can buy off the shelf that probably sounds better than any studio microphone I used, you know, in my career in radio, and put out a piece of work to the world and have thousands of people a day consume it on their smartphones with headphones and hear it just the way I'm hearing it right now with my headphones on, to me is a revolution. What's the economic impact of that? You know, I don't know. I mean, I can tell you that I've been able to support myself and grow my business and create a business in my home, which I've talked about many times, out of nothing, with no costs, because I don't have employees, really. So my costs are taxes and technology, for the most part, or the fact that I can get in the vehicle and drive across the country and continue to do podcasts and literally untether from the office or untether from any particular geographic location, and that people all over the world are doing that. You know, I think we're very early on in the game in terms of measuring technology. And so whenever I write or post something or do a podcast about any kind of technology, and I always see the comments, well, I hope that robots will pay taxes to support the people they displace. And I'm saying, in return to that, so that's really what liberty's all about, paying taxes to support people that don't have skills or that won't work. And the implication is any kind of technology or technological growth will displace people and destroy jobs which will never be found, and that there's only a dark outcome from technology. There can't be a light outcome. There can't be a positive outcome. And it's very interesting to me. Somebody wrote a piece this week that said, I love this. In the post-war decades, every time a new technology came along, the feared bonfire of jobs didn't happen, or only briefly and not everywhere. It's different this time. The jobs massacre that super intelligent machines and systems presage doesn't, for now, seem to have leave many large areas of human work. How can you say that? When, first of all, additive manufacturing, super intelligent machines, robotics, and systems like that, we don't know what jobs they're going to create or not create. We don't know what kind of jobs will exist because of those types of developments. So I think it's really amazing that people will say, we know that, you know, manufacturing created jobs, and we know that it displaced people but yet created jobs. So in other words, we took people off farms and put them in factories. Not that it was such a great thing to be off the farm and in a factory, but, you know, we created a whole, you know, raft of consumer goods, and, you know, you could measure the economic growth. All of a sudden, the new developments in artificial intelligence or autonomous machines or robotics or any of this stuff, additive manufacturing, you know, all of these things apparently won't produce any new jobs. I mean, it's bizarre. This is a bizarre reaction to something that we haven't had yet. I often talk about one time I had a guy write some software for me. This goes back 25 years. And, you know, I asked him one day to talk to me about artificial intelligence. Now, this is just a coder. I mean, I don't know if the guy is today a major executive or what he was. We were both young guys, and he was just starting his business. And he said, you know, we usually in the business, in computers, you know, and in IT, we refer to artificial intelligence really as that which we cannot do now. So the things that we project that we'd like to be able to do, we view as artificial intelligence. Today, artificial intelligence has taken on a whole new connotation, and usually an Orwellian or a dystopian connotation. And it's very possible that all this new technology will actually free us, do a better job of protecting us, and allow us to start businesses that really give us the liberty to do what we want when we want to do it, and do it in such a way that it's actually we do a better job. So there's a giant caterpillar crawling across this piece of paper. I mean, this thing is gigantic, green. And, you know, I came out here last night at about 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was, I thought it was raining. And you know what it was? It was caterpillars and bugs falling off these trees. That's how robust life is. And I guess the lesson here is that we are the most adaptive animal on the planet. And why would you think that new technologies would destroy jobs permanently, that people wouldn't figure out a way to adapt to the new realities and actually get better jobs and have a better life and have more leisure and make more money than they ever could have imagined before? I just don't understand that. I don't understand that people have that negative view immediately. It's a knee-jerk. You know, if you post something about, I put a thing up about a robotic kitchen that was on display at the Consumer Electronics Show in Hong Kong. And I told you about the first response. And the second response, one of the other responses was, well, this looks like a CGI video, so I'll wait to see the real thing. Well, the kitchen itself was serving meals up at CES, so, you know, it's functional. And apparently the guy didn't watch the whole video because the first part of the video is CGI, but then once you get into the video, the kitchen is demonstrated. The other thing is, there are automated sushi kitchens in Japan and South Korea serving up meals. And if you go online and do a search, you'll find a Bloomberg story about an automated sushi kitchen. I think it's in South Korea, but it could be in Hong Kong or Japan. I don't even know. It's in Asia someplace. And the thing, it's amazing. And there are attendants and people on duty. I bring this stuff up because we're about to have a huge debate about inequality. We're about to have a huge debate about minimum wage. And what is minimum wage? Minimum wage is a price. It's a measurement. It is an indication. It's an indicator light, if you will, of the value of labor. So a wage, what someone agrees to pay you, is an indicator of what they're worth, what your worth is to them. It's the same as if you go into business selling a service and you have to charge what the market will bear. You can't just go out and charge what you want to charge because you'll go out of business that way. You have to figure out what your price point's going to be, and when you can raise a price, that's an indication that your business is performing properly. Well, you know, labor and people in labor apparently just don't think of it that way. They just think, I deserve to get paid such and such amount of money, just ignoring the fact that cost is an indicator. That's all it is. Money is a medium of exchange at its most base level. And you can exchange nails or stock certificates or, you know, gourmet coffee in exchange for work, or you can actually get paid a wage. So I find it fascinating that people have this problem with money, but I mean with minimum wage, that we're going to have this huge argument about minimum wage. But the reality is, In 20 to 50 years, when you walk into a fast food restaurant, human beings will not be cooking the food. Machines will cook the food, and they will do it better and cleaner and more effectively, and it will be very cost effective. There will still be employees, but it's very doubtful that you will even, you'll probably pay with a smartphone device of some kind. You will probably not have an interaction with an employee at the counter, but the employees will be there monitoring the machines and making sure that the place is kept running properly, but it just won't be as many. So if you're one of these minimum wage employees, and if you're thinking about a minimum wage job, and if you're one of the people that advocates for minimum wage workers to get paid more, you know, it's a losing proposition, because this is a shift that is happening very quickly in this country. Autonomous machines, artificial intelligence, this is a revolution that's going to occur very quickly in the West and in parts of Asia, you know, in any developed country. And the reason for it is, in many, many countries in the West, we don't have a new workforce that we can employ. So it has a bearing on almost everything, because here, let's talk about immigration very quickly. We're in the process of moving to autonomous machines to do all kinds of skilled, semi-skilled, and unskilled labor. And at the same time, we are importing laborers, basically unskilled laborers from Mexico and Central America and other parts of the world. And you got to ask yourself, what are these people going to do? And so the problem that's going to develop is there's going to be nothing for them to do. You know, countries like Japan and China are embracing this stuff because they are going to have a really significant age curve in the next 5 to 10 years because they have aging populations, and so their workers are aging. So as we move into the next 50 years, China is going to become very old. Europe is going to become very old. And really, the United States is going to become older in spite of immigration. We won't age as quickly as some of these other countries because of immigration. But we're going to have a lot of problems due to the fact that the kinds of jobs that people would have gotten are going to be done by machines increasingly, because machines don't complain. They don't join unions. They don't call in sick for no reason. They don't cause problems. You plug them in and they work. And they also work 24 hours a day. So I'm excited about it. It's just that people are going to have to adjust to this, and complaining about it and, you know, continuing to say it doesn't work and it's pie in the sky. That's Paul Krugman's thing. We can't measure, you know, it doesn't produce economic growth. Well, it doesn't produce economic growth if you measure it with 1950s, you know, kinds of equations. We're not quite sure what kind of economic growth it will produce when it all starts to come together. I've gone on far too long about it. But speaking of technology, I have to mention this very quickly. I guess we're getting the big go-ahead for big solar parks across Minnesota, and some people are upset about it in the various towns where they've been proposed. The state legislature's solution to this is simply to pass a law that requires solar producers to have a certain percentage of their power exclusively from solar now. And all that's doing is it's forcing these people to go out and buy or make deals with these farmers putting up these giant solar panels. Let me explain something to you. Solar energy produces only, if at the most, 1% of our power. And the other problem with solar energy is you have to create batteries in order to store the power, because obviously the sun doesn't shine all the time. Having said that, almost no one is including in their stories a discussion about the pollution that comes from producing solar panels, and especially batteries, as well as the pollution that comes from storing them. So while we're concerned about the environment, apparently we're not concerned enough about the environment to do two important things. One, we ought to take a look at regulating solar power in terms of how we throw these things away and how we're going to deal with the waste and the pollution, real pollution, not just pretend pollution, carbon-type pollutions from producing solar panels. And two, we need to end the subsidy for solar power. It will never produce enough energy. And you're going to see situations where, aside from think the wind powers are bad, wait till people living in communities where there are huge solar power arrays start having problems due to radiation, and start having problems due to the fact that they're having, you know, literally light pollution because these things are shining in their faces. And this is why communities around Minneapolis and around Minnesota are opposing this. The state and the federal government subsidize ethanol, which is polluting the Gulf and polluting the rivers and the lakes in the United States and in Minnesota. Far more than any oil company is. It is going to cause more pollution, both in terms of killing birds and also, you know, with wind power and also with disposing with this stuff later on. So it's very important to point that out. And then at the same time, I need to point out that U.S. oil production is now at a 43-year peak. And the only reason I want to talk about this story very quickly is that I was stunned to see this. Now, these are preliminary numbers, but, you know, Saudi Arabia is producing about 10.5 million barrels of oil a day. Do you know how much the United States is producing? 9.566 million. So we're very, very close to the level of Saudi Arabia in terms of our oil production. And what people are finding out, and it's not just oil, it's all kinds of fossil fuel, natural gas, basically hydrocarbon. There is an almost endless supply at this point of this stuff. And we have spent the last 40 years with this pipe dream of solar power and wind power as producing more energy than fossil fuels, whether it's nuclear, whether it is coal, or whether it's natural gas or, you know, oil. And, you know, these kinds of quote-unquote alternative energies are never going to produce enough energy to power a country like China or the United States. And it's time we admitted that. If there was no subsidy for ethanol, if there was no subsidy for solar or wind, those things, those buildings wouldn't be built anywhere. Now, I have a couple of quick outrages. The first one is, you've all heard about the Obama phone, which is actually the Bush phone, because it was a program initiated under the Bush administration. But I have to say this, and it really irritates me. The Federal Communications Commission under Tom Wheeler now wants to extend subsidies to people who quote-unquote qualify so they can get a reduced price for their internet. And I'm going to say right now, I am not interested in paying taxes and paying extra on my phone bill so that someone can get free internet at their house or low-cost internet. If you're not working, if you're not doing anything, if you don't have any skill and you want internet, go to the library. You can get free internet at the library. You don't need to get free internet at home, and I'm sure as hell not going to pay for it. And then finally, a quick radio comment. There's all been a lot of discussion about radio and where radio's headed. And, you know, for years, radio's primary mode of technology was people listen to the radio in their cars. And so I want to point out very quickly, while I knock this giant caterpillar off this piece of paper, that more and more and more auto companies are actually putting in interfaces so that you can use your smartphone directly interface through Bluetooth with your car. I know GM is going to start offering Android and iPhone apps. They won't be apps that that come with the car. In other words, it used to be that Ford and GM and the other automakers, they have their own system that is supposed to link up with your phone, and it's a disaster. It doesn't work, and people want their own interface. These new systems will simply be a mirror of your phone in the car, so you'll be able to listen to podcasts and everything else a lot easier, and it's going to revolutionize media and media usage in cars. And I just thought I wanted to point that out, especially for the radio people, that they need to hear that, because, you know, I'm going to say this very quickly. You know, there was a big radio convention recently, the National Association of Broadcasters Convention, and I thought it was very amusing that they spent a considerable amount of time at the NAB talking about podcasting. That ought to tell you a little bit about where radio is headed in terms of the future. Podcasting is growing by leaps and bounds. People really enjoy having control of their media. And I can't tell you, had it happen again this weekend, I showed somebody how to get podcasts by listening, you know, by downloading Stitcher on their Android. And I said, you know, it's not just my podcast, it's everybody's podcast. And the guy was like, oh my God, I can get this and I can get this and I can get that. And I said, yeah, you'll never listen to the radio again. And the more, and it doesn't matter if the guy is 50, 60, 70, whenever. Obviously, younger people don't care because they listen to Spotify and Pandora and everything else. As soon as you show somebody how to listen to SoundCloud or how to listen to Stitcher or iTunes or get a podcast through some sort of app, they're so excited that they essentially have control of their own media in their hand, and I love doing that. You know, it's kind of cool because this podcast, there was a lot of talk about technology, and I want to thank BakanRD for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. Don't forget, if you want to learn more about additive manufacturing, John Backlund's the guy to talk to, and he's going to be doing a webinar at Backlund.com on and with the people from Stratasys that make 3D printers. John's one of the few manufacturers who's really been able to accommodate and to integrate additive manufacturing, 3D printing into the manufacturing process. And what it means for clients is, you know, they can print prototypes, they can show you what the part's going to look like, and in some cases actually make the parts that are going to get used. So, you know, he's really made a lot of progress on this front. And on June 2nd, 2015, you can register now at Backlund R&D at Backlund.com, B-A-K-L-U-N-D, for the webinar. And they're going to do a couple more. Plus, John's been on some maker podcasts. So all kinds of information about Backlund R&D at Backlund.com. Again, wicked fast turnaround times, innovative solutions, real client service, as I've talked about many times, and real resources about Backlund at Backlund.com. If you are interested in the company, find out what they can do for you. You can call John Backlund at Backlund.com or go to Backlund.com, B-A-K-L-U-N-D.com. Find out what energy, wisdom, knowledge, and imagination can do for your company today at Backlund.com. And again, it's just B-A-K-L-U-N-D.com. I want to thank the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis podcast, Mad K Studios, creating quality original automotive artwork. And Mad K is going to be out at some of the antique auto shows this summer, the big one over at the State Fairgrounds. And I'll tell you more as we get closer and closer to those events. And of course, maybe the mobile podcast command studio will be there too as we get ready to hit the road this summer. I'm heading out to Washington very, very soon. If you want to know more about Mad K Studios, click on the banner for more information at the Bob Davis podcast. Also got to thank you guys listening on Stitcher.com. It's an app that is great for Android devices, iTunes, TuneIn. There's also players on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com for TuneIn, Stitcher.com, as well as Blog Talk Radio, which is another place to find the Bob Davis Podcast. And of course, you can listen right on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. I always really appreciate that. Don't forget the comments. People will email me comments from thebobdavispodcast.com. There's a comment section. I would love to have you comment on that. And I also want to again mention that the Mobile Podcast Command Unit 8 is going to be headed out east, and it's completely crowdfunded, so all the diesel fuel is coming from you guys, and I don't want to get stranded in Paducah, Kentucky. So so I appreciate your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. I got an oil change on that thing today, and it is ready to roll. So stay tuned for more information about where I am headed next in the Mobile Podcast Command Unit 8. I'm super excited to get back out on the road, and I look forward to doing those podcasts. So thank you. By the way, I'm going to be at the EAA Air Show, and I know it's in Oshkosh. I was corrected by my friend Mark Corin. That is going to be at the end of July. I'm really, actually, talk about technology. That's a huge technology show. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's the big air show at Oshkosh. So I'll be in the campground, I think, unless I get into the media lot. But the Mobile Podcast Command Unit will be there, and I'm looking forward to that, and many, many other events. I think the only other event I'm sure I'm going to go to right now is the Iowa Straw Poll on, I think it's August 8th. So stay tuned for more information to the Bob Davis Podcast, and thank you for listening to Podcast 375. Well, it is just a little bit after midnight, about 5 minutes before the plane is about to land, so I better jump in the car and head out to the airport.
Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring. If that diamond ring don't shine, he gonna take it to a private eye. If that private eye can't see, he better not take the ring from me. Oh dear, they call her Nanny Gold to make it pretty.
pretty baby, a Sunday.